So Rav Wolfson, for today we have a few things on the agenda, Mirtz Hashem. The first thing I want to talk to you is about a three-line Beis Yosef. Now, all the halachas that we've been learning about Kashrus Halulav and Pasus Halulav are all codified by the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tafresh Mem Hei. And towards the end of the Siman, the Beis Yosef quotes a Mordechai, who in turn quotes a Sefer Yireim. Sefer Yireim is one of the Bali Atos Rabbi Elazar Mimetz. And we found the Mordechai, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's in here somewhere? Okay, the only question is where did I place it? Okay. All right, we'll hopefully we'll find the Mordechai. Do you remember offhand, Yechiel, where it was? Oh, here it is, good. I should have put a page in here. Okay. Oh, alright. We managed. Okay. Now, the interesting thing here is that although the Beis Yosef is perplexed by this Mordechai in the name of the Yireim, but nevertheless, everyone comes to the defense of the Sefer Yireim. So what's the Sefer Yireim telling us, and why does the Beis Yosef have a problem with the Sefer Yireim? So the issue, and this is the subject of our discussion today, again, we hopefully will move on to a few other areas, is Niktav Rosho. And so if you take a look at the very beginning of Perek Lulav HaGozel, and this is a sugya that keeps coming up in Perek Lulav HaGozel, but it starts with the first Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Niktam Rosho, in the case of a Lulav, and the top part of the Lulav broke off, possible. Now, the impression you'd get when you read the Mishnah, Lulav Sheniktam Rosho possible, is that you can't make a bracha on such a lulav. It's absolutely possible. We did have a discussion, which is going to come up again, about shasat chak. But leave out shasat chak, because that doesn't seem to be what the Yireim is talking about. The Yireim is actually making a comment on the Mishnah, and a very amazing comment, one that perplexes the mind of the Beis Yosef. The Yireim says the following, that when it says in the Mishnah Niktam Rosho Pasul, Lechatchila Ka'amar, that the word Pasul in the case of a lulav whose head was chopped off is only Lechatchila Pasul, which means, he says, V'yachzar Acher Acher, he should run around looking for
another one,
a better lulav, a lulav that has a head. But v'ileka, if he doesn't find Acher, he doesn't find another lulav, he only finds one without the head, yivarech aleha,
you can still make a bracha.
Still make a bracha. Why? And he says, the Yireim, this says he's quoted by the Mordechai, the Ashkechan we find in other places, the Katani Pasul, that the Mishnah employs the word Pasul, b'makom, even though Bidyevid kosher. So it's very strange. The Mishnah used the word kosher, apostle, but it really means kosher. What it means by apostle is that if you have a different option, this is the one you want to stay far away from. But it doesn't mean to say apostle the way we understand it, that the lulav is apostle through and through, even Bidyevid. He says no. He says that sometimes the Mishnah used the word apostle, even though what it means is that Bidyevid it's kosher. And he gives certain examples from Masechta Menachos, from Masechta Psachim, Adkan. So that's the end of the quote of the Mordechai, the name of the Yireim. And on this, the Beis Yosef makes the following comment. V'lo yadati mi hechricho lara'em lefarishken u'midivrei kol haposkim lo mashmahochi. He says, I don't know what pushed the Yireim over the precipice to say that in our Mishnah, when the Mishnah says Niktam Rosho Pasul, it only means Lechatchil it's Pasul, but the evidence kosher. He says, even though I have to admit there may be cases somewhere in Shas where the word Pasul is used to mean Pasul Lechatchil, but what forces the Yireim to say that this is another one of those very exceptional cases where apostle doesn't really mean what we think it means. And he goes on and says that the poskim don't seem to assume so. So according to the Beis Yosef, the poskim reject this Sefer Yireyim. They hold that posel means through and through, both l'chatchila and b'dieved. And he's perplexed as to what forces the Yireyim to explain it in that way. That the word posel in Niktav Rosho means what? L'chatchila it's posel, but if you need to and you don't have another option, then it's really kosher. So again, that's the whole Beis Yosef. And it's a major discussion over here because it touches on many, many different scenarios in which you could find a case of a Dalet Minim where it's possible. And the question is, what does that word possible mean? So this Beis Yosef sort of triggers off a lot of literature, meaning in the, you know, Beis Yosef lived 5 centuries ago, and in the centuries since the Beis Yosef, you know, the Achronim were perplexed. Why would Rabbi Elazar ben Metz insist, that was Beis Yosef's question, that Niktam Rosho means Posel Chatchila? So let's open up to the Mardechai, which is the Mardechai that's being quoted here. And the Mardechai says, you know, after quoting the Sefer Yireyim, he says that this is what it means. Now, one of the super commentaries on the Mardechai is called the Bigdei Yesha. And he quotes this Beis Yosef that we just saw. Lo yadati mi hechricho la ra'em. Ra'em is Rashi Tevis Rav Elazar Mimetz lefarish ken.
What's the same?
So again, you know, I have a very strange edition of the Shas Bavli. It's supposed to be an improvement. So you'll have to tell me if you have the same edition that I have. In my edition, it's the Mardechai on page Gimel.
In case he has it this way, it's Simon
Tufshin Memvav. So if you have Tufshin Memvav, you have it? What is the page number? Maybe you have the same Gemara. So it's not the same Gemara that I have. But you do have the Bigdei Yesha, correct?
Yes.
So in my edition, it's the second paragraph called Os Beis of the Bigdei Yesha. And it starts with the word Re'em, Rabbi Elazar ben Metz. First he quotes the Beis Yosef, Lo Yadati Mi'achricho La Re'em. Lefarish Kei. Says the Bigdei Yesha, Nirali. Yeah, this is an exciting challenge. The Re'em Mefarish Niktam Rosho. What's his interpretation of Niktam Rosho? There are a number of different interpretations. And he says, Hainu, it means, Beis Olam Ha'emtsayim, the two middle leaves, Hayotzim Mirosh HaShidra, that come out of the Shidra. And he says that although Tosus rejects this Pshat, Tosus is going to say that Niktam Rosho means that the Olam on the head, on the top of the lulav were broken, not the ole ha'emtsai. The ole ha'emtsai is what we call in our language the tiomes. And Tosus rejects this possibility. So there are two ways we can do this. If you have a gemara in front of you, it would be exciting to open up the Tosus and see why he rejects this possibility, which according to the Bigdei Yesha is exactly the possibility that the ra'em accepted. Shalom Aleichem Zev. How are you? Long time no see. Okay. So does anybody want to open up to the Tosus and see it inside? It's up to you, right? You know, I'm not forcing you to do so. I mean, I'm not going to even talk to you, Dr. Joel, because, you know, that's upgrade that, you know. But for those who like to see a text inside, it's smack at the very beginning of the Perek on Choftes Hamid Beis, and it's the second Tosus on the page. Niktam Rosh. Initially, Tosus suggests this interpretation: L'chora Mayri B'shnei Olam Ha'emtsayim Hayotzim Mirosh HaShidra, and he rejects it. It cannot be that Niktav Rosho refers to those two Olam Emtsayim that go all the way up to the top of the lulav. That's impossible. Why? He says the Gemara on Daf Lamed Beis, later on in the parak, quotes Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says Mitla hatiyomes posel. If the tiyomes was removed, then it's posel. So Tosfos says, I don't get it. What is Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi teaching me? If the Mishnah itself says that niktam rosho, which means he didn't surgically remove the shnei olim emtsayim, but he just broke them, maybe they're hanging on for, you know, the broken piece is hanging on for dear life, he says, then how much more so if he removes the tiyomes entirely? So let's read the kash inside. He says, Kasha, the Gemara, Kama Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Nitla Tiyomis Posel. And what's the Tiyomis Hain Osam? This refers to the two Olim Haim Tzayim. The Ha, and now Afilu Niktam Rosha, the Mishnah says is Posel, Kolshke Nitlo Legamre. What is the Chiddush here of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi? He's not adding anything. I have it with the Kal Vachomer. If the Mishnah says, and Niktam Rosh is referring to the Shnei Olam Emtsayim, it's possible, how much more so in the case of Nitlat Yomis? Because Nitlat Yomis means that
the whole loss is gone.
Correct. He surgically removes the two Olam Elyonim. So if he broke it, and the Mishnah says it's possible, how much more so if he removed it? And based on this kasha, Tosfos reinterprets the mission of Niktam Rosho. Tzarech lomar de Niktam Rosho Mairi Berov Olim Ha'elyonim. That there's a group of leaves on the very top of the lulav, a very exclusive membership club, and those are called the Olim Ha'elyonim. So again, in every lulav, he's saying that there are Olim on the bottom of the lulav, and then there are Olim on the top of the lulav. We're not talking about the middle Olim, which is called the Tiyomis. We're talking about the whole group of Olim on the top of the lulav. And Tosfos says that with regard to those Olim, we'll say, let's say there are five Olim, how many of them were broken in the Mishnah?
Three
out of five. If a throw of three out of five, or let's say six out of ten, whatever the number of the Olim are, and the Olim Elyonim, that's called Niktam Rosho. And that has nothing to do with the Tiyomis. The Tiyomis plays a different role, and it could very well be that even though the Tiyomis is broken, the lulav is still kosher. When does it become posel, says Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi? Is nital, if it was removed, if he surgically removed the middle olah, which we call the Tiyomis, then the lulav is posel. But if the Tiyomis is broken, and for that matter, let's say five out of ten of the olam elyonim were broken, the lulav is still kosher. At what point do we cross the boundary line, the red line, and it becomes posel? When it's rov, let's say 6 out of 10. But again, Tosfos' Havamina was that maybe Niktam Rosho would mean the Shnei Olam Elyonim, the Tiyomis. He rejects that because of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi tells us that Nitla Tiyomis posel. Comes along the Big Day Yesha, and he says, now I have a source for the Ra'em. Why does the Ra'em say that Niktam Rosho is only Lechatchila, but the evidence kosher? Because the Ra'em understood, as Tosfos did initially, that Niktam Rosho means the Tiyomis was broken. And then the Ra'em had the following kasha. Well, so what did Rabbi Yeshua come to be Mechadish, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Because obviously, if Niktam Rosho is possible, then how much more so Nitla Tiyomis is possible? And the answer is, because our Mishnah is talking about what kind of psul? Only Lechatchila. And comes along Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, and he says, but if it was completely removed, so it goes like this. According to the Big Day Yesha, in explaining the Ra'em, it works out the following. Two scenarios. Scenario number one is where the Tiyomis was broken. Scenario number two, where the Tiyomis was surgically removed. If the Tiyomis was broken, that's the case of our Mishnah. And what does the Mishnah mean when it says posel? Lechatchila it's posel. Comes along Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi and has a different scenario where he surgically removed the Tiyomis. And in such a case, the lulav is posel afilu b'di'evet. And that's the chiddush of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. If not for Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, all I know is about a niktam rosho, which is posel lechatchila, again in the Tiyomis. I would not know that there's such a case where the Tiyomis, if it's upset, if it's removed, it's possible to the evidence. That's what Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi comes to be Mechadish. Again, Tosfos himself is on a different wavelength, because Tosfos himself rejects this pshat of Tiyomis in Niktam Rosho for this very reason, because Tosfos understood that Niktam Rosho is possible even what? even b'di'eved. So what did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi tell me in the case of niklat yomis? If niktam ha'rosho, which means that yomis is posel, and Tosafot understand that's an absolute posel, then how much more so in the case of niklat yomis, and then you're stuck with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And that forces Tosafot to reinterpret niktam rosho, that we're not talking about the yomis at all, we're talking about rov olam ha'elyonim. And Rov Olam Elyonim, there's a new category called Niktam Rosh, has nothing to do with the Tiyomis. The Niktam HaTiyomis would be Kosher. Niktam Rov Rosh HaOlim, the Olam Elyonim, that becomes Posel. Comes along Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, he says, even though in the case of Niktam HaTiyomis, only one of the Olam Elyonim, albeit the highest one, was Niktam, was broken. But that's because we still have we still have the robe, and we still have the tiyomis. The tiyomis is still hanging in there. But if, says Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, we remove the tiyomis, then the lulav is posel, which means it's absolutely posel. So it means according to Shita Satosis, before we see the re'em, and again, all this is based on the Big Day Yesha, we have two cases. We have case of niktam rov olam elyonim, and then we have the case of nitla hatyomis. In niktam rov olam elyonim, it's possible because rov olam elyonim were broken off, and that's called a psul. If on the other hand you only had what, not rov but miut olam elyonim, then the lulav remains kosher despite the fact that there was a niktam on the tyomis. When do we have, in what scenario, a case where the tiyomis would completely undermine the kashrus of the lulav, and it would be possible even with the evan? That's called nitla tiyomis. That's from Yeshua ben Levi. Adkan, shita satosis. Now we get to shita sara'em. The shita sara'em is that, no, the Mishnah of Niktam Rosho is talking about what was Niktam? The Tiyomis. Now, if you'll ask me if Niktam HaTiyomis is possible in the Mishnah, so why do I need Rabbi Shimon ben Levi to say that Nitla HaTiyomis is possible? Kolshke Nitla HaTiyomis. I don't need Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. The answer is that our Mishnah of Niktam Rosho, which means that the Tiyomis is broken. What does the Mishnah mean by the word possible? L'chatchila, but the evidence kosher, comes along Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, but medvar v'burim, when you still have the Tiyomis, as we said, is hanging on for dear life. But Nitla HaTiyomis, if we remove the tiyomis, that's already a whole different story. And there, the lulav is not a lulav, and it's possible even b'di'evid. But in the case of niktam rosha, which means the olam elyonim, meaning the tiyomis, there it's only possible chatchila and not b'di'evid. It comes out, Rabosai, that the Big Day Yesha presents the thesis that the source for the ra'em, this is what forced the ra'em, and you remember that we started with the Beis Yosef, and the Beis Yosef says, Lo yadati ma hechricho b'kach, what forced the ra'em to come up with this pshat? The answer is, I'll tell you what forced him. He the ra'em, was suffering under the weight of Tosis's kasha, meaning, why did Rabbi Shimon ben Levi have to tell me anything about nitla tiyomis if I already have niktam? So he came up with this fantastic thesis, the ra'em, a breakthrough shita, that niktam ha'tiyomis is enochinami kosher b'di'evit. It's only possible chatchila. Comes on Rabbi Shimon ben Levi and he says, but nitla tiyomis is possible even b'di'evit. Ad kan, the Big Day Yesha. Now, Rabosai, this is all very nice, except for one problem. We have the Iran, and the Iran himself tells us what forced them to come to this conclusion. And again, although I don't have the Iran in front of me, I have the Ran, and the Ran quotes the Iran. So if you could look up the Iran and find it, that's even better. But in the absence of the Iran, I will read to you the Ran's quote of the Iran. And the Iran says the following. This is in Simon Tuf Chaf Bey. So maybe, Yechiel, you're an expert at finding these things. If you have, again, the Iran has been published a few different times, but the classical Iran has it on page Tuf Chaf Beis, okay, 422. He says the following. He says, let's open up to Daf Lamed Dalet. This is the Iram himself. You know, we're going back to the original now. And the Iram says, let's open up to Daf Lamed Dalet. Lamed Dalet Omid Aleph. Lamed Dalet Omid Beis. Okay. The Mishnah on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis addresses the cases of Hadassim and Aravos, and specifically the case of Niktam, or otherwise known as Katum. Niktam refers to the action, you know, breaking it, and Katum refers to the result of the action, you know, describing the Arava or the Hadas after it was broken. And the Mishnah records a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Tarfa.
You left Lulav, right?
Excuse me?
You're not talking about Lulav.
No longer talk about the Lulav. The Lulav, by the way, finishes up on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis. And the Mishnah already, this is the second Mishnah in Perek, Lulav HaGazel, on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis addresses the Hadassim. So there's one Mishnah called Lulav, that's the first Mishnah in the Perek. Then there's a Mishnah that's called Hadassim, that's the second Mishnah in the Perek. Then the Mishnah goes on to describe what's common between Hadassim and Aravos, that's the third Mishnah, and that's on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. The Mishnah records a machlokas about Katum in the case of Hadassim and also in the case of the Aravos. This is a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Tarf. So Rabbi Yishmael says, again, we need three Hadassim, minimum. We need two Aravos, minimum. It could be that that's also maximum. In the case of Hadassim, it's fair to say, according to all Rishonim, that we need three Hadassim, minimum. And then the Mishnah goes on to tell you that within the context of Hadassim, we have three Hadassim. What happens if two of them are Ketumim? That means two of them have the head chopped off, and one of them, one out of the three, is not katum. It has its head, it's holding on to its head. So Rabbi Yishmael says that since one out of the three hadassim is eno katum, even though it represents the minority, two out of three are katum, are ketumim, then the hadass is kosher. Meaning the three hadassim are, you can fulfill your mitzvah. Rabbi Tarfon goes a step further, and he says, "Afilu shloshtam ketumim." Even if all three adasim are headless, nevertheless he was yotzei the mitzvah. Who do we paskin like? So, if you take a look about 10 lines down below the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. This is parallel to Tosfos Divrei Maaseh Shetehe. If you have a classical Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. So the Sefer HaYireim says the following. He says, how could it be that we paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, that afilu shloshtam ketumim, again, Rabbi Yishmael is a little bit more complicated because at least one of the three hadassim is not ketum. But in the case of Rabbi Tarfon, we have all three ketumim. In lulav, what would that be parallel to? Well, lulav is only one lulav, so what would that be? Ketum. You know, the lulav hakatum. Yeah, so if you have all three adasim are ketumim, that's equivalent, that's parallel to the case of a lulav hakatum. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says we passing like Rabbi Tarfon. So the Yireim asks the following question: Vatnan, what about the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak that's referring to a lulav? And there it says niktam rosho possible. So why is it that in Hadassim, all three Hadassim are Ketumim, and nevertheless, Rabbi Yishmael says, Rabbi Tarfon says that what? The Hadassim are Ksherim. And yet the Mishnah in at the beginning of the Perek of Lulav HaKotum establishes that it's possible. Everybody hear the Kasha. Who asks this Kasha? Rabbi Lezer Mimetz. Okay. And he answers the following: Hadis na niktam ha rosho at the beginning of the perek is possible lechatchila ka'amar. That's only lechatchila. V'achzor acher acher. You should look for a different lulav. V'ef v'e leka acher yivarech ale. He makes a brach on a lulav hakotum. V'ashkechana. We find in other mishnayos in Shas diktani. Posel b'makom kosher, that the word posel, even though it's kosher, means that l'chatchila look for another one. But if you can't find another one, then it's kosher. That's what the Mishnah means. And now we have the Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon referring to Hadassim. And there, Rabbi Tarfon wants to tell you that if it is Khatum, then even Lechatchila, you can use it, even though all three Hadassim are Ketumim. So let's just summarize Rabbi Elazar Mimetz and compare it to the Bigdei Yesha. Again, I'll go over the Bigdei Yesha just for one more time for myself, but before we get to that, let's just talk for a moment about the Ra'im himself. You know, everybody's dancing around trying to figure out what Rabbi Elazar Mimetz, what forced him to come up with this Chiddush that the word Pasul in our Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Lulav HaGozel means Niktam Rosh HaPasul means L'chatchila it's Pasul. The answer is, and the Sefer Yireim himself supplies the answer, that we have a stira between two Mishnayos. In the Mishnah of Lulav, it says Niktam Rosh HaPasul. In the Mishnah of Hadassim, it says Niktamu. And now we're talking about all three Hadassim, according to Rabbi Tarfon. Rosham is kosher. How do we reconcile this? Says the Ra'im, we reconcile it by telling us that when the Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Lulav HaGozel says what? Pasul, what does it mean? Pasul Chatchila. The Mishnah, in the case of here the Ra'im doesn't spell it out, but we can go in two different directions. Either the Ra'im means that in Hadassim, later on we'll see a Ramban and a Bala more about this, but that in the case of Hadassim, Rabbi Tarfon says kosher, right? Rabbi Tarfon says kosher. He's again, the language of Rabbi Tarfon in the Mishnah is afilu shloshom ketumim, meaning that they're all three ketumim. Nevertheless, Rabbi Tarfon says it's kosher. So I don't know if he means b'dieved it's kosher. Let's assume he means b'dieved it's kosher. But that's not a stira to the Mishnah at the beginning of Lulav that says that what? Then Lulav HaKotum is pasul, because what does the Mishnah mean by Lulav HaKotum? If you have another Lulav, Yesh Lo Acher, they should take a different Lulav, but if he doesn't have a different one, then this one's kosher, and the Ra'im says explicitly you make a bracha on it. This is not the Bigdei Yesha, Rabosai. The Bigdei Yesha says that the problem that face that compelled the Rabbi Elazar Mimetz to reinterpret that Mishnah of Niktam Rosh as possible to refer to L'chatchila was the fact that Rabbi Shuman Levi says that Nitlat Yomes is possible. Why did Rabbi Shuman Levi have to tell me that Nitlat Yomes is possible? I know with the Kalachom from that Mishnah. Because since the Ra'im understood, says the Bigdei Yesha, that Niktam Rosh was referring to what? The Tiomis, and Niktam is Pasul, then how much more so, Kolshkein, Nitla Tiomis is Pasul? The answer is no. Says the Ra'im, that Nitla, that Niktam Rosho is only L'chatchila Pasul, whereas Nitla is much more harsh and radical, and therefore it's Pasul even b'dieved. That's the thesis of the Bigdei Yesha to justify the conclusion of Rabbi Elazar Mimetz. But in all honesty, in all fairness, and this is a pell on the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef says, well, Yadati, I don't know what forced him. Maybe he didn't have a copy of the Sefer Yireim, those faces, which I don't know. You can check with the historians, we'll figure that out. But be that as it may, the Sefer Yireim answers the question. He was bothered by the Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon in the case of Hadassim, and there the Mishnah says that even though they're all three Ketumim, nevertheless the Hadassim are Ksherim. How do you reconcile that with the Mishnah of Lulav? With a lulav hakotum is possible, and the answer is the Mishnah is referring to l'chatchila. That's the Mishnah of lulav hakotum at the beginning of the parak, and the Mishnah of hadassim that's talking about a b'dieved situation where all he has is ketumim.
Sure, but you're saying that they learned lulav from hadassim.
I don't know. That's a fascinating question. Let's ask two questions. I'm going to review my question, and then we have Yechiel's question. Question number one is I don't understand why the Beis Yosef was perplexed by the Sefer Yireim. So again, there may be a historical, technical answer to that question. Maybe he didn't have access to the Sefer Yireim.
Obviously didn't, because he quoted the Mordechai.
Correct. But again, the Mordechai quotes the whole Sefer Yireim.
Including this piece.
So again, it's very difficult to know what was going on over here. That's point number one. And therefore we, again, I'm going to use a very harsh language here, but, you know, for the sake of we're all amongst friends, we're going to reject the Big Day Yesha. Because the Big Day Yesha is a very nice theory unto itself, but it's not supported by the text of the Sefer Yireyim. Okay. That's point number one. Now, point number two is the following. That's what Yechiel wants to ask here. Is there a difference, and then again, we're going to get to the Rabban and the Baal HaMor, I'm trying to lead up to this question in its time, but is there a difference between Lulav and Adasim? The Sefer Yireyim seems to imply that it's all Shavah B'Shavah. That if I can prove to you that in the case of Niktam in Hadasim it's kosher, then in Niktam in Lulav it has to be kosher. Okay, so hang on to that premise of the Sefer Yireyim, because if not for that premise of the Sefer Yireyim, we could have possibly, and that's what the Baal HaMor is going to do in a few minutes, we could have differentiated between Hadasim and Lulav.
Well, I wasn't so smart. I was looking at the Bach seems to imply.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so let's go through. I want to go through first the Taz and then the Bach, even though the Taz should come second, but the Taz says something absolutely amazing. Again, we're all in Simon Tov Reish Mem Hey. The Taz happens to be in Sifkot and Zion, and he says the following. He says, HaMordechai B'Shem HaYireyim Hichshir Niktav Rosho B'Diyavid. Mishum, why? Habrais of Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. This is a great review of the whole parak. The Brice, if you take a look on the very top of Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, there's only one word missing, which is on Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. That's called Maisa. Tells a whole story about the Bnei Hakrochim. And in those places, Rashi explains that they didn't have access to the Dalet Minim. There were no Atzei Dekel there, so they couldn't get a lulav. Is Hayu Morishim es lulaveim lebnei bnei. So this is a very nice suggestion for a grandfather. I don't know how many people in this room are grandfathers ready by show of hands. Oh, we're not doing too bad. So we have a bunch of zavus. So when you write your last will and testament, again, here you get into issues here about you know the Bechar, if you have a you know if it depends whether a grandson goes by his father, if his father's a Bechar, and if the grandson is, they're very complicated issues. Ayin Yad Sara, you know, if you go to Yad Sara, which is not far from here, they give you a whole free demonstration about how to write a will that would reconcile any differences between what you have in mind and what the halacha has in mind. So you'll get some professional guidance for free. In any event, so what did the Bnei Krachim leave
as a bequest
as a bequest to their grandsons? They left lulavim. Now, by the time your grandson inherits your lulav, mitzvah shem, I'd maybe have some shana, if you know what I mean, it's already well dried out. So the question is, why is a lulav hayavesh? Well, you know, why are you bequeathing this to your grandson? It's a dried out lulav. It's probably as dried out as you could imagine. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to prove from this that a lulav hayavesh is kosher, which means that he drops the requirement of hadar in the case of lulav, because where does the Torah require of hadar? Only in an esrog, creates hadar. And he doesn't accept the hekesh of the Rabbanon. The rabbis have a hekesh. He didn't have a hekesh. Rashi says you need a mesorah for a hekesh. And this gets Tosus all upset. Anyway, Bekitsa Maisa, Rabbi Yehuda did not have the hekesh, and the requirement of hadar is limited to an esrog, doesn't apply to a lulav. The Chachamim say that even a lulav requires hadar, and therefore a yavesh is possible. So what's going on here in this brisa? So the Gemara establishes that Shas Hadchak Shaini, that this is a different situation, because the only lulav, why did he bequeath to his grandson this lulav, this fatruka, this dried out lulav? The answer is because there were no lulavim, it was Bnei Karchum. Again, there are various shittas here, the Aruch and Rashi, why there were no lulavim in that area, whatever it might be. So they were in a situation of Shas Hadchak. So here we have a gigantic machlokas. We'll just quickly mention other shitas that are not relevant to us. The Rambam shita is that this is a special din in lulav hayovish, and we don't know why. Other Rishonim say that it would apply to all four minim. And the Torah quotes a shita, which the Magid Mishnah also quotes in Hilchos Lulav Perek Ches, in the name of the Gaonim, that it applies to all psulim in all minim. And that's how the Torah codifies it, and that's more or less how it's brought down la halacha. Comes along the Taz, and he says the following. We're making a big deal about the Sefer Yireyim, who says that Niktav Rosho is kosher b'di'evet. Forget it. Don't rack your brains trying to figure out why the Sefer Yireyim said such a thing. The Sefer Yireyim meant to say that all psulim in a Shas Hadchak, if you only have that choice of a lulav, an esrig, or whatever you have, are all kosher. And the Torah codifies this halacha, lemaisa, and says you make a bracha on it. So we have a new halacha called Shas Hadchak. Again, we have to figure out what that means. The Torah actually quotes his father, the Rosh, who waves the flag of this shita that b'Shas Hadchak, all psulim of all four minim are kosher. And that's basically the Sefer Yireyim. All the Sefer Yireyim is doing is he's reading the Mishnah at the beginning of Masecht of Perek Lulav HaGozel, and it says that Niktam Rosho is possible. And he's telling you that Niktam Rosho is possible because you have another choice of a lulav. If you have no other choice of a lulav, that's called what? Shas Hadchak, and therefore you take a Niktam Rosho, you take a headless lulav. Don't get all excited about the Sefer Yireyim. You know, he's really basically pouring some cold water on this flame of the Sefer Yireyim. So again, Rabosa, we're going to ask the same question on the Taz. The Taz is trying to understand the Sefer Yireyim, and he says, well, this is the halacha on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis of Shas Hadchak. That's not what the Sefer Yireyim says. The Sefer Yireyim says that this is the halacha. This is the halacha of what? Let's read it again. Of Hadas Sheniktam Rosho. Is Rabbi Tarfon says what? Even if all three Hadasim were Niktam Roshom, nevertheless, the Yotz in the Mitzvah. It's kosher. Now, what do we do with the Mishnah of Niktam Rosho Posel? Says the Yireyim. That means Posel Chatchila. Now, would the Sefer Yireyim therefore expand this to include all the minim? I don't know. It seems that he's applying it to the lulav. But it really, in terms of the actual text, which is the background to his proof, meaning if you ask for the makar, the source for the Sefer Yireyim, it's Hadasim, because the Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon is Machshir Hadasim. But again, the Sefer Yireyim wants to imply, he doesn't spell it out, but he implies that if you can ask me Akasha from Niktam Rosho at the beginning of the Perek, that's Midin Lechatchil. That's Posel Lechatchil. So again, Rav Moshe, just give me a minute to summarize what we're saying. What we're saying is the following. Number one, the Beis Yosef has no clue where the Sefer Yireyim is coming from. Number two, the Bigdei Yeshu says he bases it on the fact that there's a Lechora, a superfluous statement of Yeshua ben Levi about Nitla HaTiyomis. Number three, we have the Taz, who says the Sefer Yireyim is just moved by the Gemara of Shas Hadchak. And he's applying that straight across the board, like the Rosh did, to all the different psulim and all the different minim. But number four, that's not what the Sefer Yireyim says. With all the respect to the Bigdei Yesha and to the Beis Yosef and to the Taz, the Sefer Yireyim himself addresses this question of why posel has to mean lechatchila, and his answer is because of Rabbi Tarfon in the case of Ketubah.
Except I looked at the Mordechai. Mordechai does not bring the Hadassim part. He only brings the first part.
So maybe the Beis Yosef didn't have
the Beis Yosef and the Taz. Nobody had the Sefer Yireyim.
Right. So historically, Rabbi is probably correct. Again, I hinted at that at the beginning, but I don't have access to the history. It's very fascinating, by the way. You know what interests me about history is that sometimes people rely on a haskama to a sefer. You know what I'm talking about? you know, a sefer could be written by authored by a halacha sefer, I'm talking about, by someone that you and I don't necessarily recognize as the great, you know, scholar and so forth. But if you read the Haskama, nobody ever reads the Haskama. You know what the Haskama is, Dan? Yeah. Don, a Haskama is what's called in English a letter of approbation. That's in fancy English. And it's very fascinating, the history of it, because sometimes you read the letter of approbation and it's signed by someone that you and I never heard of. And he's writing a letter of Haskama. For example, the Ketzos HaChoshen is probably the greatest work ever written on Choshen Mishpat, on one quarter of the Shulchan Aruch. And you read the approbation, and the at the time in its history, the Ketzos HaChoshen would have completely failed. The Sefer would have gone down to oblivion if not for this approbation. And nobody today ever heard of the rabbi who signed on the approbation. Everybody knows the Ketzos. I forgot his name right now. But approbations are very fascinating because sometimes it's the exact opposite. The person who wrote the letter, who wrote the Sefer, is an unknown. But the approbation is very, very important. So, for example, I don't know if you know this, there's a tremendous issue about letters in a Sefer Torah. You know, there are a number of discrepancies in Sefer Torah. The question is, what's the final word? So you'll find that some poskim will write that we rely on, let's say, the Chai Adam. You know, whatever it is. I'm not going into details. I can give a shir on this for a long time. Now, the person who says that we shall lie in the Chai Adam might be an unknown, correct? But then you read the letter of approbation. And the letter of approbation writes, Halacha kamosa b'chol makom. And we pass like him on whatever he says. But then you realize that there were two editions of that very same sefer. And in the first edition, he didn't say anything about who we rely on for chaseris and yiseris. And the approbation was written to the first edition. But what happens is when you republish a sefer, you take the license to republish the letters of approbation. But meanwhile, there are certain things that were added to the second edition that weren't in the first edition. This is a big issue in Hilchos Sefer Torah. But anyway, so there's no question in my mind that historically the Sefer Yireyev was very hard to get a hold of. Very hard to get a hold of. I also had trouble getting a hold of one. I have a copy, but it's, you know, it's one of these photocopies. You know, it's not the real thing.
Where is it again in the Sefer?
Oh, it should be, if my handwriting is correct, Tav Chaf Beis. But again, there are many editions of the Sefer Yireyev. So,
do a search for the phrases.
Maybe you could do that.
I searched one of the phrases that the Mordechai quotes, but I didn't find that phrase.
No, you didn't find it.
But I mean, I have the Sefer Yireyev, I have the whole thing. But
yeah. See if you can find it.
Tav Chaf Beis.
I have it written down as Tav Chaf Beis, but that's very tricky, very iffy, because the Sefer Yireyev has been published many times. So I don't know which edition it is. That I can't tell you. Again, if you happen to have the edition in Otzar Chachmo, maybe you could find it in Bar Ilan also has the Sefer Yireyev. But if you have the Otzar Chachmo, which is a PDF file, so if you happen to have the same edition, it's on page Resh Mem Beis. If that helps. Maybe you could print it out. Okay. All right. Now, again, if we go over the Taz, just one more point on this Taz. The Taz claims that this halach of shasat chak, where you can make a bracha on something that's posel, because that's the only lulav or esrog that you have access to. And that's not what it says in the Sefer Yireyev. Sefer Yireyev says it about hadasim. One could say the following, that the Taz is not addressing the question, what's the source for the Sefer Yireyev? He knows very well that the Sefer Yireyev is based on the Mishnah of hadasim. But perhaps what the Taz wants to answer is, where is the Mishnah in Hadassah, meaning Rabbi Tarfa, where is he coming from? So basically what I'm saying is the following, it's A plus B equals C, meaning the Taz is only addressing one issue, And the Sefer Yireyim is addressing another issue, and we need both. The Sefer Yireyim is answering the following question. How do I know that there's such a thing as making a bracha on katum, on something that's possible? Niktam Rosha. The Taz wants to know, what's the framework for this whole halacha? Meaning, true that the Sefer Yireyim is based on the Mishnah of Hadassim, but yet the Sefer Yireyim is willing to go even a step further, and we could apply this principle all over universally, that if that's all you have and it's possible, that's what you're going to make a bracha on. How does the Sefer Yireyim know that? So it works like this. We start with the Sefer Yireyim. The Sefer Yireyim now has a breakthrough. The breakthrough is the mission of what? Hadassim. The mission of Hadassim says on Daf Lamed Daled that Rabbi Tarfa and Paskins, you can have all three, Hadassim, Ketumim, and yet it's kosher. Comes along the Taz, and he wants to put the Sefer Yireyim into a broader context. He wants to understand, how does this apply straight across the board to all situations where that's the only one of the Dalet Minim that I have, and it's possible? Can I make a brach on that? For example, in the case of Lulav HaKotum, where the Mishnah says that it's possible, can I make a brach on a lulav akotum if I only have niktam rosh of a lulav? That's the only lulav I can get access to. So here's where the Sefer Yireyim, here's where the Taz quotes the Brice on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, that the Brice establishes that in the Bnei Krochim, Hoyu Morishin es lulaveihem lebnei bneihem, and the Gemara says, the Rabbanan said, not because Yovish is kosher, but because it's a Shas Hadchak. So we see, as the Rosh points out, that we can take this halach of Shas Hadchak and we can universalize it to apply straight across the board to all psulim and all minim, and maybe that's what the Taz is trying to do. Meaning the Taz comes lafuke the following. Don't think that when the Sefer Yireyim says that Katum is kosher, he's only talking about the psul of Katum. That maybe Katum fits into a different category. But what about other psulim, like Yavesh, for example? So that's maybe what the Taz wants to do. He wants to establish that the Sefer Yireyim is justified in taking this breakthrough conclusion, which the Sefer Yireyim bases on what? On Hadassim, and universalize it to all psulim, and say that even Yavesh could be kosher b'shas hadchak. How does the Sefer Yireyim know that? And that's what the Taz is coming to support and expand the Sefer Yireyim to apply it to all psulim, like for example Yavesh. And that's based on Lamed Aleph.
All psulim regarding the Dalet Minim, not
all Dalet Minim.
Just Dalet Minim. When you say
all Dalet Minim, right? Although again, the Rambam sheet is that the din of Shas Chak only applies to one psul and only to one min. It's got to be a lulav ayavish. I did not find any shita. You see, even the Magid Mishnah quotes the Gaonim, although he doesn't spell out that it applies to all four minim, he says it applies to all the psulim. The Rosh, on the other hand, spells out that it applies to all minim and all psulim. So I'm just pointing out that if the Taz is correct, that what the Sefer Yireyim says about Hadassim applies straight across the board to all psulim and all minim, then that's what the Taz was motivated to try to establish. What gave the Sefer Yireyim the, we call it in Yiddish, plaitzus, you know, tefai, you know, what gave him the guts, the gumption, to go ahead and say that just because Hadassim, the ketubim, akasha, according to Rabbi Tarfon, I can now extrapolate a radical, revolutionary idea in halacha that in all psulim and in all minim, I can apply this principle of Shas Hadchak if there's no other min, and there's no other kosher of min, it's only a posel, I'm going to still make a bracha, and it's not limited to the case of Hadassim. How does he know such a thing? That's what the Taz wants to answer. Now, once we have the Yireyim's breakthrough, which is based on the Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon in Hadassim, now we can take the brisa of Bnei HaKrochim, that Morishin es lulaveim lebnei bneim, and we can say that that's telling me, as the Rosh says, that in all psulim and in all minim, b'shas hadchak you can make a bro. Again, I'm just trying to make some sense out of the Taz. Unless, as you say, the Taz just didn't have access to the Sefer Yireyim, and that's the start.
I found it. It's going to be very long.
It's very long Sefer Yireyim.
Very long, this, you know, this seminar, because it puts all of the other slulav in a dozen.
Oh, I see.
In one
yeah, the Sefer Yireyim has, for each mitzvah, he has one simon.
But he makes this point only by Hadassim. He does only make this. He only plays. He talks about Nick Tom by a little bit, doesn't say anything about lachatila or b'eved, only by hadas and before. Right. I can say he talks about that. So then
I'm more inclined to think that maybe the Taz didn't have access to the Sefer Yerayim. He assumed the Taz that Niktam Rosho in the case of Lulav would be kosher, b'dieved, according to Sefer Yerayim. And given that assumption, I mean, I'm just suggesting, he quotes the Gemara, the Braisa, Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, to substantiate that conclusion that even a Lulav Ayovesh, b'shas adchak, is kosher, you make a broch. Okay. Now also, if you take a look at the Beis Yosef himself, he's talking about Niktam Rosho, correct? What does he mean? Is he talking about, right, he quotes the Sefer Yerayim, who's been quoted by the Mordechai, that Niktam Rosho Posel means only what? L'chat Chila. Is he talking about Hadassim here?
No.
He's certainly not talking about Hadassim. The whole discussion here in the tour is about Niktam Rosho and Elulav. Again, support for the fact that the Beis Yosef didn't have access to the Sefer Yerayim, because the Sefer Yerayim was not discussing, it wasn't addressing Elulav Sheniktam Rosho. But the assumption was, on the part of the Beis Yosef, that if he's applying Niktam Rosho Kosher in the Yerayim, in the case of Hadassim, that he'll apply Niktam Rosho Kosher in the case of Elulav. And then he's bothered by that, the Beis Yosef, because that's a very radical conclusion that has far-reaching repercussions. Where did the Sefer Yerayim get this from? Mahuchrach lakach, what forced them? And the Taz was also asking that question. So the Taz came up with the Brais on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. The Bigdei Yesh is very sharp, because he's basically addressing the question that forced Tosus' hand into assuming that Niktam Rosho is not the Tiyomis. And the answer is, says the Yerayim, it is the Tiyomis. But Niktam Rosho of the Tiyomis is different than Nitla Rosho of Nitla Tiyomis. And Niktam Rosho is... So again, the Bigdei Yesha, like the Beis Yosef and like the Taz, understood that according to the Sefer Yerayim, this halacha of Niktam Kosher B'dieved applies straight across the board. It's not limited to Hadas. Who would argue that this halach of Niktam Kosher only applies to the Hadas? So I want to show you a Bala Ma'or who's trying to explain the Rif. Now again, you might have a different pagination than I do. I think it's on Tes Zayin in the Rif, in the old Rif. Again, I have this new edition of the Rif. And it's a little bit, you know, it's an upgrade on the old edition of the Rif. But on the other hand, it makes it difficult to tell people what daf you're on. So my daf, it's on Mem Hei. And the Ran has an entire page on this line in the Rif. The Rif paskins, straight out of the Gemara that we saw in Daf Lamed Dalet, that Omer Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, Halacha Karevi Tarfon, that means that if you have three Hadassim Ketumim, you could be Yotzei the Mitzvah, even though you don't even have one single Hadas that's not Ketum. All three are Ketum. So if you take a look in the Ran, who summarizes the, you know, the Kashas, the objections to the Rif, of, let's say, for example, the Baal HaMor and the Ramban, he says, Vehikshu Olav. Again, I'm just pulling out one line from a very gigantic long Ran. Ma tam lahachshir niktam rosho shel hadas yoser mishar haminim. Again, this is not Rabbi Elazar Mimitz. We're talking about the Rif. The Rif only in one case has niktam rosho kosher. And the obvious question is, if the Rif has codified over and over again in all the Mishnayos until then that Niktam Rosho is posel, why does he say that in the case of Hadas, Niktam Rosho is kosher? So the Ran quotes the Ramban, again, it's in the Melchavas Hashem, you can see it here, and the Ramban says the following, HaRamban mechazel l'taritz kushos elu, the Omar, the haidem achshirin Niktam Rosho shel Hadas, yosem mishar minim, hainu, Mishum the al yedei shehu avos biolim ein haktima nikeres bo kemoshu nikar b'shar hamin. So the Ramban invokes the pasuk in Chumash that describes the hadasim as anaf eitz avos. Chazal say that the word avos means, we discussed it in the early shiur today, Michael gave me a good word for that, that the leaves of the hadas overlap one on top of the other. That's called avos. And therefore he says, the Ramban, that the leaves overlap in such a way that they reach even beyond the top of the anaf. Right? There are olim, there's olim, and there's the anaf. Right? So the anaf is what you, I guess you call in English, what? The branch? The branch?
Stem. How
you
say?
Stem.
The stem. So we have the stem, and now we have the leaves. So the leaves have to lie in such a way on the stem that they cover the entire stem. So the Ramban is assuming that the leaves on the top will go even beyond the top of the stem. In which case, if the stem is broken in its head on its top, you wouldn't be able to see that. Masha'enkin, in the case of a lulav, the niktam rosho is absolutely nikar. Anyone could see that because there's nothing covering the top of the lulav. You know, I was wondering, I'm just joking about this, but maybe according to the Ramban, if I had nemach a lulav hakotum, a niktam rosho, maybe I should cover it over so that no one sees it. There are many psychological reasons why I'd like to do that. I don't want anyone to come over to me and say, Berzon, you're taking a lulav that's absolutely possible, right? So then I'll quote the Urayim and I'll tell him I didn't find a better lulav. The truth is I had a better lulav, but it cost me 1,000 shekels, so I wanted to go cheap. So I bought a Niktam Rosh lulav. But maybe according to the Ramban, yeah, Lenny?
I just said the lulav doesn't really have enough. It's all olim.
Correct. And the olim halyonim, according to Tosis, are the critical olim. And if something up there is broken, according to Tosis, rov olim elyonim, that's obviously nikar. Anyone could see that. In the case of haravos, I'm not exactly sure, which reminds me that I have an expert in the Dalbin that I want to invite to give us a show and tell kind of thing. But the question is, when? What time is good? It could either be during the time that we have Shia now, or during the time that we have the morning Shia, or as Michael suggested, some sort of compromise in the middle. But in any event, he comes with a whole bag of lulavim and esrogim, and he shows you all the halachas, and he goes through the lumdus of the sugya. He's one of the outstanding avreichim in the Mir Yeshiva where my son learned. So my son gave me his number, and he's excited about the proposition. And I think it would be a great way of summarizing a lot of the sugyas that we learned. But I have to just figure out how to coordinate the time. He has to owe me, he owes me a phone call to tell me when he's free. So the whole thing might be just a theoretical question. Then Aran quotes the Baal Amor. And he says the following: Vayoser nochen umashapiresh ba harabeinu zerachia levizal, the niktam lechud uktumim lechud. We should not identify niktam and katum, even though we until now have assumed they're both the same, just that niktam tells you about the incident that occurred and katum describes what you have as a result of the incident. He says they're two different concepts. The ktumim demasnisen hainu shederech anfei hahadas sheyotzim mitzideihem badim upaoros v'heim mafsikim bekanei hadas d'lo avi tlosa b'chad kina v'tzarech liktam osam misham u'liachah shekotem osam mehem nikraim abadim k'tumim in mind apostle savar dehefsek havi v'lo avi hodar v'rabi tarfin savar d'lo avi afsoka v'hodar. So the Baal Amor comes up with a whole new fantastical description of the scenario of niktam in the case of hadasim. It's not what we think, that the head, the top part of the stem was broken, but rather there are various olim that shoot out from the middle of branches that come out from the middle of the hadas. And he says, hey mafsikim, they become some sort of an interruption in the kanei hadas, meaning that the kanei hadas should go flow, they should flow from beginning of the hadas to the end. And here you have these pieces of branches that shoot out this way and that way. And the machlokas here is what happens if he surgically removes these pieces that shoot out. And Rabbi Tarfon holds that even though it's not kederach priyos, and that's not the way it looks in nature, nevertheless, that's enough to be machshir. And this is similar to another halacha in Adasim. What else do we hold that you could be machshir in Adasim by surgically cutting it off? Correct, the anavim. But don't do it on yontif, right? But if it's not yontif, then you're allowed to cut out these berries. Again, some poskim say they have to be black berries to passel the adasim. And if you have these black berries, and there are more berries than there are leaves, that's rabu anavim and anafim, then the hadas in its present state is possible. But you can surgically remove these berries. Comes along the Rabbeinu Mizrachi al-Levi, the Bala Ma'or, and he claims that the machlokas here about Hadasim Ketuvim is about a case where he cuts out certain pieces of branches that might create a hefsek in the between this set of olim and the other set of olim in the Hadasim. So again, when we get to the Sugi of Hadasim, we'll have to take this apart, but I just wanted to show you how it comes out that according to the Ramban and the Bala Ma'or, the Rif only is willing to be machshir hadasim ketumim, and in other cases of ketumim, everything is possible. So now we have three possible shitos. Let's just summarize the three shitos of katum. The first sheet of katum would be the most extreme lechumra, that would say that anything's as katum, even hadasim are psulim, and it means psulim afilu b'di'evin. The second shita, which is the Sefer Yireim, the way the Taz understood it, and probably the way the Beis Yosef understood it, is that Ketumim are Ksherim B'di'eved under the general universal halacha that all psulim are B'di'eved B'shas Hadchak, if you have nothing else. Counts along the Rif with the middle shita. He's not willing to say that all minim, even the adasim, are psulim, even b'di'evid in the case of ketumim. He's going to have one exception to the rule. Which of the four minim will b'di'evid be kosher, even though it's katum? The adasim. And why is that? So we have two variations. We have the variation of the Ramban. The Ramban says because katum is not nikar in the case of avos. Avus, and then we have the Bala Ma'or, who says that the reason why Katum is kosher is for a whole different scenario. We're not talking about breaking off the top of the Hadas. We're talking about pieces that shoot off in the middle of the Hadas, etc., etc. Those are the three Shitas that we have. Okay. Let's have both sides for a minute go back to the Mishnah at the beginning of Lulav HaGazel. And after the case of Niktam Rosho, we have two other cases. We have what's called Nifritzu Olav, and we have Nifridu Olav. Nifritzu Olav is posel, and Nifridu Olav is kosher. So Rashi explains, what's the difference between Nifritzu and Nifridu? Why is Nifritzu posel and Nifridu is kosher? Rashi tells us that in the case of Nifritzu, the leaves of the lulav have been totally detached from the shidra. They're not attached to the spine of the lulav. And even though he did agad, Rashi says that we paskin that agad would not be enough to be machshir nifritzu olav. So it means that you have like a broom. The Gemara compares it to a broom. And what that means is like a broom is made up of different, what should we call them, sticks? What word can we use? To the prongs or the, you know, the different pieces that make up a broom. I don't know. Anybody have a word for that? Anyway, so that's the... What do you say? Stems? Oh, I don't know. Stems of a broom. Okay, if there is such a thing, I don't know. But in any event, a lulav broom is possible according to the Chachamim. What do I mean? If each stem is, each one of the olim is a separate, you know, detached entity, and then he attaches them all together to the lulav with a binding agent, whatever that binding agent is, that cannot salvage the lulav. That's called nifritzu. And therefore it's possible. Nifridu, says Rashi, is that although the olim are separated from the shidra, but they're not detached from the shidra. They're still mechubarim l'shidra. So nifritzu olim, says Rashi, nifritzu mishidra v'eino mechubarim ela al yidei aguda. And Rashi quotes a gemara that's coming up a little bit later called Chufya, and Chufya is not considered a lulav at all. Chufya is a kind of entity which looks like a broom, and the various anafim are separated completely one from the other. And Rashi says that nifritzu is not considered a lulav, even though he tied them together to the shidra. Nifridu, however, Rashi says, is kosher. Why is nifridu kosher? Even though they're separated, he can still tie them together and bind these olim to the lulav. By the way, does he have to go ahead and do so? No, he doesn't have to go ahead and do so. That's machlokas tanoim later on. Rav Yehuda says he has to go ahead and do so. If it's nifridu, he's got to tie it together. And who remembers what pasuk he derives that from? Kapos tomorrow, but he re-vocalizes, if you could call it that, the word, and he reads it as what? Kafut, kafus. And kafus means it has to be bound together. The chachamim don't require that you bind it together. All the chacham requires that they still be attached, although they're hanging by a thin thread, to the lulav. That's the difference between nifridu and nifritz. So I want to read to you one line in the Ritva. The Ritva says the following. He says, "V'eino nochon." There's a problem here. Whenever you see a Rishon that says "eino nochon," the Rishon is convinced that he has such a stark kasha that there's no answer to this kasha. What's his kasha? He says, "Delodami." He's referring to nifritzu l'nifridu. He says that the Mishnah is trying to create a contrast between two similar cases. There's some common denominator between the two cases of nifritzu and nifridu. And the Mishnah establishes that whereas in nifritzu it's possible, in nifridu it's kosher. Oh. So I deliberately skipped a line in the Ritva for pedagogic reasons, and you can fault me for that, because this kasha of the Ritva makes no sense if you skip the first line in the Ritva. I want to explain why I skipped the first line. Because I believe that there was a great commentary on the Mishnah who was worried about, he was very concerned about the Ritva's kasha, and he tried to find a very great similarity between nifritzu and nifridu. Who is that? Rashi. That's why Rashi tells you that nifridu and nifritzu are really one and the same. The only difference between the two is that whereas in nifritzu it's totally detached, right? The olim are no longer attached to the shidra. Nifridu means they're moving away from the shidra, but they're still mechubarim, they're still attached. Here the Ritva has no problem. On the contrary, I think the Ritva would give Rashi a grade A+, because now, dami ahadadi, to use the Ritva's language, we have a great similarity between what? Nifritzu and nifridu. It's all about separating the olim from the shidra. However, how radical of a separation was it? Rashi says, in the case of nifritzu, you've passed all the boundaries, and aguda, tying it up, is not going to help you. Because nifritzu means that the olim were totally detached from the shidra. Nifridu, on the other hand, says Rashi, is kosher, because there, it's still mechubarim to the shidra. So what's the line that I skipped? So now we can appreciate the Ritva's kasha. It's the Rif. Pirush HaRif Zal. The Rif has a very unique interpretation of nifritzu. And according to the Ritva, we ain't enough. We cannot accept the interpretation of the Rif. Okay. Okay. Rif says the following: Nifritzu olav means shenitku ha'olim mimakom chiburam bashidra. So far it's word for word Rashi. In other words, nifritzu according to the Rif is identical with nifritzu according to Rashi's pshat, meaning that the olim was separated from the shidra, completely detached. I'll read it again. Nitku ha'olim mimakom chibura bashidra. Okay. But then we get to nifridu. What's nifridu according to the Rif? Nifridu, he says, she nifridu hahutzim ki ein psichas hachorios v'lo nitak echod michavero ulefichak kosher. The Rif gives us a lesson in botany. And he tells us how exactly the lulav, the olim of the lulav, are, how they develop on the palm tree. And he says the following. Again, we're no longer talking about nifridu separating the olim from the shidra. That would be Rashi's pshat, which would make it very similar to the case of nifritzu, except that it's not separated completely. So what does nifridu mean? So the Rif says that you have to know how a leaf, if you call it an ola, I don't know, the word leaf is a little bit tricky because we don't usually in our minds associate a leaf with the lula, you know, with the parts of the lula that are attached to the shidra. So, but anyway, in Hebrew it's called an ola, so I'm going to translate it to English as a leaf. If somebody has a better word for the parts of the lulav that come out of the shidra, I would appreciate it. But anyway, he says the following. Every ola, every leaf on the lulav tree is really a chibur of two different leaves. And there's something called the gav of the ola. So if you look at a lulav, milafanov means the shidra is right in front of you. That's how we hold a lulav, right? So if you look carefully, every single oleh has a little piece. It's called the gav ha'oleh. I guess you'd call it in English the backbone of the oleh, meaning every oleh really is two oleh. But there's a chibur between these two oleh. And he says the following, that the lulav on the tree goes through two different stages. Betchilas gidulam, at the beginning of the development of the olim on the lulav, he says the following. There's the gav, right? That's the point in which the two leaves are connected to make them into one. And then there's the balance of the ola, where there is no connection. But he says, Shokhvin zel gabizeh. Although there's nothing actually attaching them, right? There's no glue, so to speak, that attaches them at that point in the ola. But nevertheless, they lie one on top of the other. They're exactly the same size.
Then there are images of each other.
Every leaf is like that. If you want to have fun and you have a puzzle of lulav, try an experiment. The only thing is you get your fingers full of white powder, which is a good thing, because if it's canary lulav, he says, there's no white powder. So that's one of his simonim, that you don't want to get a canary lulav. Anyway, have we discussed canary lulavim? We had a whole discussion about that? I don't remember. He has six different simonim, to identify. One of them is there's no powder. So anyway, what you can take, if you want to take apart a lulav as an experiment, or maybe you want to wait till after Yontif, or maybe you have a puzzle, whatever the case may be, so you'll separate each lulav into two. And you can actually, if you rip the gav of the lulav, or use a razor, or whatever you want to use, you'll end up with two olim from every single ola, because every single ola is a Siamese twin. Okay. Now says the Rif, what happened? What happens to the lulav on the tree? He says there are two. There's a second stage in the development of the lulav, and at this stage, the parts of the lulav, again, parts of the ola, I should say, that are shochvim zel gabiz, they start separating one from the other. Okay, v'eino mechubarim u'misrachakim ze mize. So again, you still have the gav, and the gav is always going to keep the two leaves together, so they're definitely attached. But in a later stage of development, the balance of the oleh is no longer shochvim zel gabize, dvukim zelaze, but rather it's eino mechubarim u'misrachakim. So now we understand the rift. The rift says that we're in the situation in which, at this stage of the development, what you have is the gav of the ola that connects the two olim into one, but the two olim are still physically separated one from the other. Says the Rif, that's called nifridu olav. And the Rif says, kevan shalom nitak legamre, you know, so he didn't completely split the gav of the ola, so the gav is still functioning to do what? To make the two leaves dvukim zelazeh, mechubarim zelazeh, but it's not in the original state where the entire oleh, meaning each of the two olim, are shochvim zelazeh, and therefore you've spread that apart. At that point, the lulav is called nifridu olav. And he says that this is not the best lulav that you want to take, but kevan shelo nitak echad mechavero kosher. So again, the commonality here between Rashi and the Rif in Nifridu is they're both kosher for the same kind of reasoning of lo nitak legamre. However, we're talking about two different issues. According to Rashi, the lo nitak legamre means that a leaf is hanging off the shidra. He's got a picture of this, Don. You want to help me find that? Do you remember the picture where he has one leaf that looks like this? It's at the very beginning of the book, so you should be able to find it. Anyway, we don't need the picture, but I'm just describing it in words. So Rashi says that it's lo nitek legamre, meaning that as opposed to nifritzu olav, where the olav completely is severed, we still have nifridu, which means that there still is somewhat of a chibur between the olav and the shidra. Right? Anyone who's in emergency medicine, no, there's a picture of, I'm asking you to find me a picture of a lulav, and what you'll see in this lulav is that one of the olim is just literally on an, like almost on a 90 degree angle, but it's just hanging in there. You find that?
No.
We don't have to waste that time, but if I find it quickly. Okay. Here. Take a look at this. Again, it's more complicated than I'm making it out to be, but just for the purpose of show and tell, if you follow what I mean, do you see that this anaf is still attached? Okay, so that's Rashi's pshat in Nifridu. And the Ritva is applauding Rashi. He's very excited about Rashi, because then Nifridu is almost identical with Nifritzu. So why is Nifridu kosher and Nifritzu is possible? The answer is that in the case of Nifritzu, all you did was blow on it, you know what I'm saying, and it fell off. You know, it was just hanging on by the skin of its teeth, as we would say. However, Rif has a whole other pshat Nifridu. The only commonality between the Rif's Nifridu, which is kosher, and Rashi's Nifridu, which is kosher, is in both cases lo nitak hachibur legamre. But now we're not talking about the chibur, according to the Rif, to the shidra, but rather we're talking about the chibur of the two olim, one to each other. And that chibur, as long as the gav was not removed, says the Rif, is called nifridu. But the Rif himself says that nifritzu means that the ola is no longer attached to the shidra. That's why the whole sugi of in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda says Yagdenu milamala, which means Rabbi Yehuda holds lulav tzarech agad. He recognizes the significance of agad. So even though nifritzu means that the ola is detached, totally detached from the shidra, we can artificially attach it to the shidra with a binding agent, and the Chachamim reject it. Why? Because it's nifritzu. Now we get to nifritzu. And the Rif says that Nifridu has to do with the chibur, the natural chibur of ha'olim shochvim zel gavizeh. That in the case of an olev alulav, what happens in nature is that the two leaves that make up a leaf are laying one on top of the other. They're dvekim zevozev. Again, it's not the gav. You know, the gav really makes it into one, but nevertheless, it's the hemshech of the gav in a different lowercase kind of closeness or dvekus, but it's not the real dvekus. And now what he did was he separated the two halves of the ole, one from the other, and he's left with what? With the gav. Since he left with the gav, therefore it's considered nifridu, lo nitak legamre. So here's where the Rif asks his question. He says, v'eino nafan. The lo dami le nifridu. He says nifridu and nifridu are not similar to each other. Meaning, there's a methodological assumption here, the Ritva, that when we read a Mishnah, and the Mishnah in one bava, in one breath, gives us two scenarios, and tells you that one is good and one is no good, we have to assume that they're very similar. According to the Rif, they're not similar at all. Because Nifritzu has to do with the connection of the Ola to what? To the Shidra. But Nifritzu has to do with the connection of the Ola to itself, meaning to the second half of the Ola. That's the kasha of the Ritva. But then the Ritva asks another kasha. The Ode, he has another kasha. The Gabi Hadas, Ketani Nifritzu. Right? So we have Nifritzu in the first Mishnah in the Perek, and now we're up to the second Mishnah in the Perek, which is called the Mishnah of Hadas. And that's on Daf Lamed Beis, Amid Beis. There too, it says Nifritzu Olav, and the Rif is bothered by this. Why? Because we should, according to his methodological assumption, find a certain commonality between the Nifritzu Olav at the beginning of the Perek, right? It says Nifritzu Olav Pasul, and now we have the same three words Nifritzu Olav Pasul in the second Mishnah. The Mishnah of Hadas. Everybody with me now? Oh. Now, let's just stop for a moment. The Ritva is going to be bothered by Lo Domi La Hadad, that the Nifritzu in the case of Oli Alulov is not the same as Nifritzu in the case of Oli Hadas. What's the man hacking about? He's going up the wrong way up a tree. They're exactly the same. Nifritzu means that the olim are no longer attached. In the case of the luv to the shidra, and in the case of the hadas to the anaf, meaning to the stem. So what's bothering the Ritva here? Oh, so he says the following. He says what bothers me is shem nitkan ha'olim min ha'etz miyad noshrim. He says the following, that there seems to be a fundamental difference between the nifritzu olav in the case of a lulav and the nifritzu olav in the case of hadas. For example, Rashi says that in nifritzu olav in the lulav, what did he go ahead and do? And this can be the subject of the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, whether it's kosher or pasul. What did he do?
Igud.
He did igud. It means that there still is a connection between the olim and the shidra. Albeit it's an artificial connection, but Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's going to recognize and acknowledge that binding agent as significant. The Chachamim say no. But at least you begin to understand what the chiddush of nifritzu olav in the case of lulav is. Ribbono shel Olam, you're talking about a lulav that has no, and it has no olim to it. Again, it had gevarna olim, meaning they were olim at some point. You know, like in Chassidus we say the Friedrich Rebbe, that's the last Rebbe, not in Chabad. That you can't say Friedrich Rebbe in Chabad. Of course, the Rebbe is still the Rebbe, right? But in most Hasidic courts, we have the Friedrich Rebbe, right? Like Mashveh remembers the Friedrich Belzer Rebbe. So we have the free of the Kaluluf, which had Olam attached to it. Now the Olam are detached. So what's the Chiddush Rav Mishnah to tell me that Nifritzu Olam is possible? Did you have a Hava Mina that there's a Lulav without Olam? The Gemara later on, and that's what Rashi quotes, I forgot what it's called in Aramaic. Help me out here, Abosai. I think it's called Harusa, but I just want to make sure I'm not... Chufiyah, sorry, Chufiyah. So something called a Chufiyah, which is a kind of a lulav that doesn't have any olim to it, and the Gemara establishes that that's not a lulav. So why do I need the Mishnah of Nifritzu? And Rashi's answer is a very intelligent one, and it's the only one, L'chora, that you could suggest in the light of the next line in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda, and that means he did Igud. So if you have a lulav that's born in nature without any olim, then that's not even a lulav. That's called Chufiyah. But in our case, we're not talking about Chufiyah, but rather we're talking about a lulav that looks identical to any lulav, except the only reason it looks identical to any lulav is because you put a binding agent around the olam. So that I understand. Now we get to the Mishnah of Hadassah. Nifritzu olav. The Ritva has a problem. Because Nifritzu Olav, as we saw in the case of Lulav, means that there was an Agad. So Nifritzu Olav is a big Chiddush that's possible, because if you looked at it with the naked eye, or if you took a photograph of it, it would look identical to a Lulav. But in the case of Adasim, this is the Kasha of the Ritva, is once Nitku HaOlim, as soon as you detach the olim from a hadas, miyad noshrim, they'll fall onto the ground. I mean, you can't gather them together and do an agat. I don't know. Maybe somebody would argue you can paste it together. I don't know. You get the crazy glue. Maybe probably take you a few hours, but you might be able to reattach the olim of a hadas to the stem of the hadas. I don't know. But in the Ritva's frame of reference, that's an impossibility. So let me just review the following. The first kasha of the Ritva is an attack on the Rif. And he says, Eino Nochen, I can't accept the Rif's understanding of Nifridu, because if that be the case that you take the two halves of an Olah and you separate them, again, without undermining and cutting the Gav of the Olah, that has nothing in common with Nifritzu. Nifritzu means that the Olim got separated from what?
The Shidra.
From the Shidra. So why did the Mishnah compare and contrast them and say that, well, they're basically fundamentally the same, but here it's kosher and here it's possible? So one up for Rashi. The second kasha has nothing to do with the Rif and Rashi. Both of them have to agree that if the first Mishnah of Nifritzu Olav Possel, in the case of Lulav, is talking about an Agad situation, the second Mishnah, the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Beis of Hadas, where it says again the same three words, Nifritzu Olav Possel, that's not a case of Agad. There was no Agad in the Hadas. So in that sense, we can break down the Ritva's question into two. Number one, how do you understand that, you know, we think that the two Mishnayos, because one is Daf on Chav Tes and the other is on Lamed Beis, so we don't have to find a compare and contrast, but the Ritva knows that all the Mishnayos are together. They're all on the same page. So the first Mishnah says Nifritzu Olav Possel. The second Mishnah says Nifritzu Olav Possel. The first Mishnah is talking about a Hava Mina that since you did Agad and it looks like a beautiful lulav, therefore maybe it's kosher. Kamash will know that Agad is ineffectual because we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's principle of lulav tzarich Agad. But the second Mishnah has nothing to do with Agad. It's not talking about a case of Agad. Physically, you're not going to do an Agad on Ole Hadasim Shen Nashru. He used the word Nashru instead of Nifritzu. Nifritzu means that it's separated and you could reattach it. Nashru means that it went down the tubes. You know, it's just completely gone. So he's bothered by the fact that the Hadasim case is not a case of Nifritzu, but rather it's a case of Nashru. And yet the Mishnah uses the same language of Nifritz. Okay, Rabbosa, we'll stop here.
Does it make a difference then the first Mishnah about Lulav?
Do me a favor, if you don't mind, John, just open the door so we'll know when they start.
It talks about Nifritz, but in the second Mishnah, it's Nifritz.
Right.
I mean, is that related?
Yeah, because somehow, with regard to the olive of the hadas, as soon as they start disconnecting, they fall off. And that happens with time, you know, that the olive fall off. So there's no such thing as nifridu, which means it's still partially attached. Shkur. Shkur. Thank you so much. So, are the gentlemen in the shir interested in my bringing this rabbi to come?
Yeah?
Okay, I didn't get too much feedback.
You're never going to get a compromise.
It's going to cost me, you know.
Never get a compromise. Pick a time, people.
Right. Well, first let me hear what, you know, what time he has available.
Yeah, but you heard this morning, if you do it at 10, the one guy says he can't, he won't stay.
Right. And part of the reason I scheduled the morning shiur 8:30, 9:30, so people can get out at 9:30 because of these people want to go to work.
Because you had quite a number of people this morning.
Yeah,
every day.
Yeah, we have about eight people.